You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation, brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras. Now, if you guys aren't familiar with Exodus Trail Cameras, I'm going to recommend you go to their website. Tons of great information about their products, right? The cool part is they're turning four. They're having their fourth anniversary. And to celebrate, they are offering 25% off their Exodus Lift 2, their Trek, and their new solar panel. And this is running from May 15th to May 28th. They have a ton of great features, right? I don't have enough time to share all of those features in this little time frame that I have to talk about it. But here's what I'm going to tell you. I have a camera off their very first run, and it has not given me any problems at all, right? Put the SD card in, format the card, turn it on, and it takes pictures, period, right? And that's what we want trail cameras to do. They work every single time. Take advantage of this. 25% off. Go to their website, exodusoutdoorgear.com. Do some research about all the functionality of their cameras, right? You can take a look at their price. You can find the one that's right for you. You can enter the discount code YEAR4, Y-E-A-R, the number 4, and save 25%.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and I'm the host of the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. I'll also be your host into the world of hunting, the icon of North American wilderness, the bear. We'll talk about tactics, gear, conservation, but we'll also bring you into some of the wildest country on the planet, chasing bear. Man, Onyx with baiting is basically equivalent to hunting out of a helicopter with a machine gun
for hogs.
And Ted Nugent. Ted Nugent, helicopter, machine gun is equivalent to baiting bear using Onyx.
Yeah.
With Colby Moorhead.
Yeah.
Okay, bam, there
and
we go.
And Smokey.
And Smokey, yeah, Smokey should not be fair chase.
Yeah, Smokey's not fair chase.
This is the third podcast in our Montana Tour series. We did a podcast with Justin and Rebecca Spring. Justin is the director of records for the Boone and Crockett Club. We did a podcast with Jim Sessions and Jared Peterson with Husqvarna Optics and Best of the West Rifles in Cody, Wyoming. This podcast is where Colby Moorhead, the Bear Tech, and I sit down and talk about our do-it-yourself, mule-based Montana backcountry spring black bear hunt. This is a in-depth podcast that we just go through all the details of our hunt. You're going to be able to watch this hunt at some point very soon on the Bear Hunting Magazine YouTube channel. And we want to invite you to check out our YouTube channel. And we've got some incredible videos on there that you're going to enjoy. Without further ado, I want to continue to remind you about our Patreon page. The Bear Hunting Magazine Patreon page is designed for those who want to support the podcast, but also our YouTube channel, which is free content. So check out Patreon, but more importantly, or likewise, or both, check out Bear Hunting Magazine. Bear Hunting Magazine is the world's only all bear hunting print magazine. We've been in print for 20 years. By supporting Bear Hunting Magazine, you are supporting the ancient and honorable culture of hunting in North America. And it's a great magazine. We print 6 issues a year. We work hard. We work hard to make it as relevant and as real as possible. We're not just trying to fill the pages with stuff. We really are trying to show the full gamut of bear hunting in North America. Hey, you're going to enjoy this podcast. We talk about the challenges of the hunt. We talk about bears. We talk about hunting out west. It's a great podcast. You're going to enjoy it. This podcast is going to be the third or fourth in our Montana Tour series of podcasts. So, Colby Moorhead and I, the Bear Tech, got back about 10 or 12 days ago from Montana.
Yep.
About 10 days ago. Today we're at the global headquarters, and we've had 10 or 12 days to ruminate upon the events of our... We were gone 11 days.
Yeah.
on our do-it-yourself Montana mule-based black bear hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give just a little bit of the story behind this year. This was my third trip to Montana. In 2015, I went to Montana with my wife. We drove up there, and we hunted in western Montana. We were kind of hosted by Justin and Rebecca Spring near Missoula, Montana. They told us some places that we should go, and we did a backpack-based 5.5-day hunt. No equine animals. We just packed in gear. I think I had a 60-pound pack. Misty carried like a 45-pound pack. We went into the backcountry for 5 full days. The first day we were there, we saw a sow and a cub. We didn't see bears for 4 days. Finally, on the 5th day, we saw a bear that we couldn't get to, big boar. It was our first, like, western backcountry hunting experience. I came away from that hunt with my tail tucked between my legs, really, because it was a difficult hunt. I mean, we didn't kill a bear. And to me, it's always such a – it is a difficult thing to invest that much time and energy into a hunt and you not get what you went there for. Obviously, that's part of fair chase hunting, is that there are no guarantees. So with the knowledge that I'd gained from this hunt, in 2017, Jim Sessions and I from Husqvarna Best of the West went back to pretty much the same region of Montana on a equine-based hunt. We really didn't have that much information. Jim is a veteran Western hunter, but he'd never been to these areas before. And we went up to Montana, and we hunted for 6 full days. And the closest that we got to a bear was like 1,000 yards. For real.
Mm-hmm.
Super difficult hunt. And we didn't kill any bears. But I learned... So now I have these 2 6 days, 5.5 days, 11.5 days in Montana, and what people were telling me was, or what I was seeing from my sources in Montana, my local sources, is that guys were killing bears basically by driving around, being mobile, and finding bears in clear cuts, walking roads. These guys were kind of like, wow, Clay, you spent 11 days in Montana and you didn't kill a bear. You're doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I kind of agreed with them in a sense, because I knew that the methods that they were employing were probably more effective. But it was more important for me to do it kind of the way I wanted to do it, in terms of being a backcountry hunt. And then we introduced mules and horses, which to me is the way that I want to spring bear hunt in the West. That's just the way I wanted to do it. We'll get into my mules and stuff. And so they were like, you're doing it wrong. You should have killed a bear. And these people were trying to help me, obviously. These were like my friends. And so what we did in 2019 was we did kind of a morphed hunt between these two things, which we brought equine animals. We were in backcountry, but the equine animals allowed us to access areas that we just probably couldn't have on foot in a day or two, and carried all the equipment that we needed. But we were mobile. We went to multiple different places. In the times past, I had locked myself into certain regions. Like, I would be like, we're going to this place and we're going to stay there for 6 days. Well, this time we said, hey, we're going to be mobile. We're going to day hunt into places on the mules and then come back out. If we get in there and find critters, we're going to stay there, we're going to camp, but we're going to be mobile, and that's what we did.
Yeah.
So that brings you up to speed with what we're talking about. So in this podcast, we're just going to talk about the details of the hunt. We did a gear-related podcast before, but the cool thing is that Colby went with me. How many days before this hunt did I, like, say, Colby, you're coming with me to Montana?
Maybe like 6 or 7.
6 or 7 days?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you had plenty of time to prepare and to physically in shape.
Yeah, yeah. No.
No.
It was trial by fire.
You didn't jump on like the trendy fitness plan to like...
No, I figured that my I wouldn't be able to get through my first initial soreness before we were going to be there.
Yeah.
From light really hitting it. I don't even have Arkansas legs yet at this point. And it's like, let's go to Montana. Trekking poles saved my life.
Yeah. Well, it was a unique situation. I was looking for somebody to go that, first of all, like, I needed a video man, Colby.
Yeah.
And I needed a video man.
A documenter.
And I needed somebody that was flexible. And that's why I didn't. I mean, there was lots of people that could have gone and would have enjoyed going. But I needed somebody that was flexible because we were basing this trip based a lot upon the weather.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do an early season hunt, but I didn't want it to be too early. And so, I mean, just a week before we went is really when we decided we were going to go. And then we even delayed it.
Mm-hmm.
I think you had 6 days before we originally planned, but then we delayed the trip 5 days. So you actually had 11 days. So you could have been in shape by then.
Yeah.
You totally could have been. No, so I totally sprung this on Colby. And so there were a couple of challenges in that we were going to – this was going to be a mule-based hunt, and you'd never ridden a mule.
No.
So how did you – how did we prepare you for this?
20 minutes on the back of Smokey.
At my house.
The day before we left.
Yeah, literally the day before we left or 2 days before. No, it was
that Saturday. We left Sunday night.
That's right.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, man, we probably better make sure that, like, everything's okay and that – and so this was my friend Trey Autry's mule. If you watched our film, $100 Squirrel, there's a white mule that Trey Autry rides, and we borrowed Smokey. And Smokey's like – we don't even know how old he is, but he's just like a old warrior, safe, like just a dead, broke, awesome mule.
Yeah.
And so I knew that Colby would be safe. Because that was my number one thing, is I knew he couldn't ride a young mule like I'm riding. Just you'd probably been killed. but I knew Smokey would take care of you. But still.
Some close calls.
Well, we had some close calls. But so you came to my house. We saddled up. I just basically said, all right, get up there. I said, ride for 30, 45 minutes. Just yeah. Kind of get your feel on this animal.
Found out I had legs shorter than a schoolgirl.
Yeah. I'm going to let you tell that story.
We had to alter the stirrups eventually.
Well, you remember Trey. Okay, I'm going to have to tell
you
the story.
You tell it, yeah.
So we borrow this saddle from Trey, and Trey goes, Clay, my daughter rode this mule last time, and so these stirrups are like really short. You're going to have to lengthen them.
If only.
And so when Colby gets on the mule, he's like, is there any way to make these stirrups shorter? And I was like, man, a 13-year-old girl rode this thing last time.
But she's all legs.
She's all legs. Well, so Colby.
She must be.
She must be. I don't know. Colby, so he rode the mule. Everything was good. He did good. And, I mean, it was just like, I knew you could do it, though, and that's an ultimate compliment, for real.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have taken somebody that I knew would fail. I knew that you would have the mental stability and toughness to do it, because that's what it takes.
Yeah.
I mean, people get scared of equine animals. Yeah. Almost everybody that I talk to about mules and horses that have experience with them in the backcountry, unless they are a straight-up cowboy or just love equine animals – you either love them or you hate them. And there's a whole lot more people that hate them than love them. And when you dig down into why people hate them, it's because they're afraid of them. And it's not their fault. I'm not faulting someone for being afraid of an animal that they've had a bad experience with. Because tons of people, and that would have been me even 3 or 4 years ago. But for some reason, Colby, I knew that you could handle it. And I knew that Smoke was going to be safe as a mule could be.
Yeah.
He's not a big mule, and he's old, and I've just been around him enough and seen Trey mess with him enough to know that he was the one for the job for you.
Yeah.
And so, but so we so th- there's many things on this trip that we were totally testing out. Like, yeah. I had already been to the Montana backcountry, but we had never carted stock all the way across the country.
Which has its challenges, for sure.
No doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, so from Northwest Arkansas to, let's just say, Montana is 24 hours on the GPS.
Yeah.
And that is driving the speed limit and doesn't include stops and different things. And so when you're pulling a trailer full of mules, full of equipment. You're not driving the speed limit most of the time.
No.
You're
I don't think we ever hit the speed limit.
Yeah. I mean, just rarely.
Rarely, yeah.
And so we're like, the trip took, I couldn't tell you how long, many more, probably six more hours. And it's probably a 30 hour. We're probably on the road 30 hours.
Yeah.
Counting the times we stopped and everything.
Yeah.
And, but I want to say that that in itself was probably the most challenging or stressful part of the trip for me.
Yeah.
Because I was using a horse trailer that probably was built in the 1960s.
Yeah.
For real. The old horse trailer. And if you saw $100 Squirrel, you saw me say that you can tell a lot about a man's expendable income by his mule trailer.
Well, but there was some major upgrades to this trailer.
No doubt.
Yeah. Had some fresh paint.
Yep.
Some official Bear Hunting Magazine stickers.
Yes.
Yeah.
It looked good, though.
And some new shoes.
Yes. We did our homework with this trailer, though. I had the bearings repacked a couple of whenever ago. We painted it just so we wouldn't be profiled on the highway. It's like, man, those guys are no telling what they got in the back of that. I mean, yeah. Like drug dealers. That's what I was thinking.
I mean, the roof even matches the truck. So, I mean, we're color coordinated.
It looked good.
Yeah.
Got our stickers on there.
Got our insurance, or, you know.
I got a equine-based, like equine, it was called American Equestrian or something.
Yeah.
But what I was thinking was, what do you do when you're in downtown Denver or downtown Kansas City and you have a flat tire on your trailer in rush hour traffic and four-lane interstate and yeah. You got these animals that you aren't getting them out of the trailer at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, on the side of the highway, you know, if you're sitting there for 4 or 5 hours trying to figure out what to do. And anyway, now for like $150 a year, I bought this equestrian insurance. And basically, if you break down, your trailer breaks down, your truck breaks down, anywhere in the country, they will send a wrecker service that's equipped to help people that are traveling with equine animals. They bring water and hay, and they have boarding facilities put up. Like, say you blow a motor, you know, and you're not going to be back on the road in 3 hours, you know. So that was good.
Yeah.
Got new tires. But we made it the first day to Spearfish, South Dakota, and stayed with one of our good friends up there that has a farm, and we were able to put the animals in a corral. So that was about a 14-hour trip to Spearfish, South Dakota. And from Spearfish over to Western Montana was another, well, by map, another 10 hours. And so by the time we got to Spearfish, I felt like our equipment was solid and that we were going to make it up there.
Yeah.
All right. And so that was just part of the battle that a lot of people wouldn't think about. But you can't keep animals in a trailer for long periods of time. Mm-hmm. I mean, for like 20 hours, you know.
Yeah.
You want to let them out about every 8 hours at least. Let them walk around. Let them stretch their legs. Let them roll if they want to roll. Give them some grass. Just kind of let them be horses and mules.
Yeah.
And so we did that. We then made it to Montana.
Yep.
Once we made it to Montana, we went and met with our friends and stayed with them. And basically, the first evening we were there, we bought our tag, and so we had to wait 24 hours. We bought our tag at 11 o'clock on the day we entered Montana. We had to wait 24 hours before that tag was ready, so we couldn't hunt the next day till 11 o'clock.
Yep.
That evening, we weren't hunting, but we spotted a bear from several miles away, at least 2 to 3 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
We spotted a bear, and it was in a place we could hunt. It was on public land. It was in a place where you could just glass forever. And we found a bear on the first day. That was encouraging.
Yeah, and we felt like he was mature enough to go after.
Yeah.
You know, just from a distance, but it didn't look like a juvenile.
Yeah, it was a good bear. And we knew that if there was one bear up there that we could see, we thought that potentially on the way into this bear that we would find other bears.
Yeah.
So, the next day, we figure out how to get into this place, which wasn't straightforward. Like, from where we spotted it, we were probably only 3 miles.
Yeah.
But from the information we had at the time, the only way in there was way around the backside of this mountain range and up on public land, because it was kind of separated by some private land.
Yeah.
Between us and where we saw the bear was private land. So you couldn't just walk straight to this bear.
Yeah.
So we had to go way around. I mean, like 30-minute drive around, parked in on some public. There was a gated road. And so it starts day one, right?
Yeah. The day of Colby's trials.
That's what we have labeled it. The day Colby became a mule skinner.
Yeah.
So we start off on the mules, and if you've ever ridden equine animals, they're always feisty, full of energy, jumpy, ready to roll, like right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And these animals also have been in a trailer for 2 full days, and they're new in a new environment. And I'll go ahead and interject here that I was riding my Izzy mule. She's 3.5 years old. That's young for a mule. That's like, you know, a teenager. It's like having a 17-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, mature physically, 18, you know, but still very young.
Yeah.
And Izzy's done phenomenal for me. I've ridden her extensively in the mountains here in Arkansas. And this hunt really was a lot about me and Izzy. For me, it was.
Yeah.
When I first got Izzy in February of 2017, she was basically a untouched mule. She had a bridle on her. I mean, the guy that raised her had, you know, he could handle her just a little bit. But, I mean, untrained.
Yeah.
And I trained Izzy. And it was the first time I'd ever trained a mule. And it was an incredible, life-changing experience.
Yeah.
Truly was. I learned a ton about training animals, and the whole point in my mind was to get deeper and stay longer in wild places.
Yeah.
That's why I had this mule, and I wanted to take her to Montana. That's what I wanted to do. It's just kind of in the mule world, when you hear people say, oh, that mule's been out west.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of like the status factor for mules,
mm-hmm.
you know, because if you could trust that animal to take it all the way out west and not die, then this is a good animal.
If both of you come back okay, it's a really good mule.
Yes, yes. And so I had this idea that I wanted to take Izzy out west. And so this was that.
Yeah.
Just for somebody that's listening that maybe never has, that hasn't been following the Bear Hunting Magazine stuff for a while, the video, there's a video on the Bear Hunting Magazine YouTube channel right now that has over 1 million views. And it's an 11-minute video that encompasses the full training experience that me training Izzy.
Yeah.
So it was pretty neat. I mean, it kind of went viral, especially in the equine world. It's called Project Hunting Mule. And there's actually 6 or 7 videos, but the final one has over 1 million views, just bumped over 1 million.
Yeah.
And I was fried by the equine community in many places. Man, trolls are everywhere. They're not just in the hunting world, but they're in every world.
Yeah.
There's people that just love to just get on there and just say you're an idiot. But Izzy's a good mule now.
Mm-hmm.
Despite me not being very me being green. But
yeah.
Izzy's an incredible animal. So back to the start of our hunt. We make it to Montana. We ride, and I would, within the first hour of the hunt, the ride, you were tested.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell the story?
I was testing try. I don't know if it's better from my perspective or your perspective.
Well, you tell it, and then I'll add to it.
All right. Yeah, so we get to riding. First thing we come against is I have to go under a tree that's fallen, but there's enough space for me and old Smokey, because we're both short.
Yeah.
I think you got off.
Yeah, I did. I got off.
Yeah, I was like, I'll just try it. Might as well. Anyways, so we made it okay. I was feeling a little bit better. And then we went up, and there's some switchbacks, and there was, I guess, what'd you call it, deadfall?
Yeah, it was just deadfall.
Yeah.
In the West, there's deadfall all over roads that, just because of the snow and fire that burns up trees and kills them, that, like, unmaintained roads are just full of deadfall. So we'd come off a main road, and we're on a side old logging trail that was totally unmaintained.
Well, before we got to this deadfall, there was the road had a lot of ups and downs. Like, I don't know, it was just really, really rough. I don't know what you would call that. But it just kind of seemed like carved out to where it's like, imagine like several different triangles that you had to go over.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had a little bit of confidence because Smokey took me through it. Izzy was like, I don't know what this is.
You know? Oh, yeah, the dirt piles. That's
the dirt piles,
where,
yeah.
Where, yeah, they tried to close off the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they piled up big piles of dirt.
Yeah.
Keep cars and four-wheelers out of there.
Yeah, so Izzy was like, I've never seen this before. So Smokey just trucked on through.
Yeah.
And then she just followed along. And so, like, we would do this thing to where Izzy and Clay would lead, and then whenever we would come to something that maybe Izzy hadn't encountered before, she was uneasy about, Smokey right. was like, let me at it. Like, he, yeah. you know, I would have to hold him back not to go. He's yeah. like, I'll show her how it's done on this part, you know.
Yeah.
He was a good mentor for Izzy.
Yes. Yeah, he
in
was.
In certain areas, because yep. he just didn't care, you know.
Yeah.
And then anyways, we came to some deadfall to where the tree had fallen across the road. And then the low part was on the outside edge of the road, so there was like a decent like drop off, I guess, yeah. like a high yeah. high steep degree of drop beside it. And so Izzy just went up to it and just stepped over it, no problem. Smokey's a jumper, we found out.
Yep.
he went up and he looked at it, and then he just decided, I got to jump this thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in the part of him jumping, his back leg caught a limb too, and so I don't know if I think this is where your perspective needs to come in.
Yeah, well, let me say too, there were all these limbs, as we call it in the industry, widow makers sticking back towards us, and we were kind of navigating just a small hole through this deadfall. And it actually happened twice in about 30 yeah. minutes, Colby, where yeah. we had to cross these logs. And the first time, Izzy and I made it across, and I turned around just in time to see smoke just sailing through the air. And Colby wasn't ready for it, I guess. And yeah. oh, I mean, you wouldn't have known. He was yeah. a jumper. I mean, yeah. Izzy stepped over, and that's kind of what you want a mule to do. You really yeah. don't want him to jump. But it was high enough that I think smoke had to jump.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
And man, I look back and I see about 8 inches of air between Colby's butt and the saddle. And I see, it appeared like your feet were out of the stirrups too.
They were definitely out of the stirrups.
I mean, all you were holding on to was the reins.
Yeah.
If we could have had like a snapshot of that, it would have been incredible. And I just know, I mean, like, there's not a question. It's like, Colby's going to hit the dirt.
Yeah.
Like, I knew that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Equine Rex, basically all involved someone hitting the dirt.
Yeah.
And it seems like it wouldn't have been that big a deal, but I mean, like, you hit the dirt while you're carrying a 40-pound pack. You had a pack on, I think, at that time, didn't you?
No,
you didn't have the
pack. We dished it that first
day.
Okay,
well, I mean, it sounds simple, but like, you hit the dirt, you might break your leg.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was a steep hill off to the right side.
Might roll.
I was worried about getting impaled by deadfall.
Yeah.
Like, for real. Or, you know, not impaled like you're going to die, but like,
poked.
That deadfall could have put a gash in your leg so big we'd had to, I mean, there's a lot of different things that could have happened.
Yeah.
Anyway, I see Colby in the
air.
He
tells me now.
And I just think, man, he's about to eat dirt.
Yeah.
And man, you landed that thing like a skier.
Stuck the landing.
Like an Olympic skier on those big jumps.
Yeah.
And bam, you stuck it. You stuck the landing, and I was like, all right. And then we go, and just a little bit up, the same thing happened again. Did it not?
Yeah.
That's the way I remember it.
Yeah.
And you did this. Well, this time I got off Izzy.
Oh, okay. That's what
and
I was
that's,
talking about.
That's when I came over, and I was going to try to just, like, be there. I didn't know what I was going to do. But that's when Smoke's back feet caught the log.
Yeah.
And the log slammed into the back of my leg as it jumped.
Yeah.
It was a smaller log.
Yeah.
And I thought we were both going to be eating dirt.
Yeah.
And anyway, we stayed on. So yeah. that was the first, like, trial by fire that you survived.
Yeah.
To skip ahead just a little bit, the other thing that happened that got you your Mule Skinner wings was on day two.
Yeah.
Tell us what happened.
I hit the ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I hit the snow.
It was almost inevitable.
It was going to happen at some point. At the end of day one, we were talking about how I'd have this full mule experience. It was just the stuff that we had done, and except for falling off. And then day two, lo and behold, like, it was like a foreshadowing of yeah. events that were a certainty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we're coming down a road, and there's a big snowbank. We're up at about 6,000 feet, and there's a pretty deep snowbank. And mules are really self-preserving. And in my mind, I was like, well, if the mules will walk on this snowbank, then it's safe. And so Smoke just is out in front leading, and he's walking across this snowbank. And then you tell me what happened.
Well, you know, Clay turned on his GoPro, and he was like, oh, this is a cool shot. Well, we're walking, and all of a sudden, all I see is, like, Smokey's right front foot just disappears, or his hoof, his leg. And then, I mean, I get real close to the ground real quick.
Yeah, bam.
But so, the video makes it look a little graceful, though. Like, it's kind of slow-mo.
Slow-mo. So, basically, the Smokey's front right foot just went to the ground, which was about 2 feet beneath the surface of the snow.
Well, I think on the video, that's what we thought happened. And then the video, when we were watching it, he actually just, it looked like he slipped.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a new, I've watched it again and again. And yeah. Now I have even revised what I thought happened.
Oh, really?
He fell through the snow, 100%, just like we thought.
Oh, okay.
Quickly pulled his leg out of the snow while you're still on him.
Yeah.
Puts his hoof back on the snow and slips.
Oh, okay.
So he did both.
Yeah.
But when he slipped is when you went off canter and splat right into the snow.
Because I could have sworn I saw his leg go through.
Well, you were right. But, and then when we watched, I was like, it didn't even go through the snow. It just slipped.
Yeah.
It went through the snow. Then he slipped.
Yeah.
Then he went down. And that's when you went down. And luckily, I had all this. It was the first time I'd turned on the GoPro the whole trip.
Yeah.
And I, like, 30 seconds before I turned on the GoPro, because it was really pretty. We're coming across the snow. And captured on film, which everybody will be able to see, Colby hitting the ground.
On YouTube.
Yeah.
And social media platforms.
Yeah.
if you're around me, you've already seen it. I don't know. It's just something cool about it. It's like, what happened.
It got him some street cred around these parts.
Smokey broke me in.
Getting dumped off the mule. And then, to make a long story short, we rode 18 and a half miles the first day.
Yeah.
Trying to get back to where this bear was. From where we saw it, again, it was only 3 miles. But to get there, and as the crow flies from where we parked to where the bear was, may have only been like 5 or 6 miles. But the switchbacks, like, these mountains are super steep. And if you're following logging roads, you're following these switchbacks. And so, I mean, you'd go for a half a mile one direction and turn and go for another half mile back the same direction and look down, and the road would be like 75 yards below you. So you've only gained very little.
Mm-hmm.
But you really can't take these mules up stuff that steep and stay on them. I mean, something that's like at a, I don't know what degree slope it would be, but I'm going to say a 70 degree slope. I mean, like, dang, they're straight up.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't ride up that stuff.
Yeah.
Now, a mule could go up it. You could lead that animal up it. But then you might as well just be walking, because you're walking up the mountain.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, so you choose to use these logging roads that have these switchbacks. Pretty easy on the mule, but it does take time.
Yeah.
You know, our mules aren't big mules. They're not super fast. They're you know, Izzy's almost 15 hands, and Smoke is probably 14 or less. And, you know, so they're not fast. You know, some guys have these Tennessee walking horses and different things that are probably have a little better pace than our mules, but we weren't interested in speed. We were just interested in getting there safe, and so that's what we did. But first day, we get to the top of the mountain, and we realize that we're in too deep to turn around. We're further away than we just couldn't get back, really. And long story short, we make it to the spot where we can see where this bear was. And we glassed for maybe 30 minutes from that point.
Yeah.
And we find the bear.
Yep.
At 5 o'clock that afternoon. So we started at 11, because we left kind of right when we could start hunting.
Yeah.
And it took us 6 hours to get to where, to get within a mile of the bear.
Yeah.
Because it's not like we were 200 yards from the bear. We were like a mile, but we could see the bear.
Yeah.
And then we're like, well, here we go. Let's go find him. And so it takes us an hour to ride around to get to where the bear is. We come around this point. I see the bear across a canyon, 650 yards.
Well, do you want to talk about my other trial?
Which one?
The one where we had to lead the mules down from where the one logging road ended down to the lower one. That's where you turned around and I kept on like rolling and falling.
Okay. We learned that when you get off these animals to lead them, like I was able to lead Izzy pretty easily down these real steep things. And then Colby was coming behind me and Smoke would want to catch up with us. And so Smoke would be like
leading me,
leading you. And I'd said, whatever you do, don't let that animal go. That was my thing. And so I turn around and Smoke is like dragging you down these slopes. You're like rolling. Really, I turned around four times in a period of probably 4 minutes to just check on. I mean, I was trying to survive myself. So
yeah,
I wasn't that worried about you, Colby. I'm sorry. But every time I turned around, you were on the ground.
Yeah.
And finally, I just yelled, just let him go.
Yeah.
And everything worked out fine.
Yeah.
Like when we let him go, he just came and got right behind Izzy.
That was our method going forward.
Yeah, you just have to let him go.
Yeah, but yeah. I got pretty whooped.
Yeah, he just rolled you down the mountain. And let's jump right to the shot, because first day.
Yeah, first day.
First day. And remember, this is a culmination of 2 years of hunting for me. And I had yet to even fire a shot at a bear. And so on the first day, we come around this corner. Bear is 650 yards.
Yep.
I want to qualify the shot because I did take a shot at that distance. I'm shooting a Best of the West right long range rifle, and I could take some heat for taking a shot that far, and I'm okay with that because I know what that gun's capable of, and I know what I'm capable of. I'm a good shot with that gun. I've shot it a lot at those distances. The gun is validated, quote unquote, out to 900 yards, which means that it literally has been proven accurate by the Best of the West guys before I even got the gun at 900 yards. The Husqvarna turrets, you can dial the yardage in directly. So there's no MOA, there's no calculation, there's no holdover. Okay.
Yeah.
Usually with a scope, you would say 650 yards, and you would know the amount to hold over the animal, so there's still some guessing that goes on. But with the Husqvarna system, you know exactly, because there's no guessing, because their turret is in yardage. So you range the bear at 650 yards, and you turn the turret to 650, and you put the crosshairs exactly where you want to hit. And so that's exactly what we did. The only thing that we didn't calculate for was the wind. And I've got a super good prone two-position rest on the backpack. I had you take your beanie off, put the beanie on the back butt of the gun. I squeeze the trigger and am fully confident that this bear is going to hit the dirt. I've shot extensively at long range with this gun out well beyond 650 yards. And that would be about the effective range that I feel like I would shoot at an animal for real. I wouldn't want to shoot one much further than that, just because I do know my capabilities. And honestly, I can hit this can't be equated to how good the Best of the West rifles are, because they're actually better than this. But I, Clay Newcomb, can consistently hit something the size of a beach ball at 800 yards with a 2-point prone rest. That's pretty good shooting, size of a beach ball.
Yeah.
So big black bear, I mean, that's within bounds. But 650, you know, you're going to drop that circle down just a little bit smaller. So totally a legitimate shot. But what we didn't calculate was the wind, Colby.
Yeah.
And there was a crosswind, and at the time from where we were at, there wasn't much of a wind. We couldn't really feel a wind. Anyway, soon after we shot, we realized there was a crosswind in this canyon. You saw the bullet hit far to the right of this bear. And the bear was unhit.
Yeah.
He scampered off up the mountain, looking around, trying to figure out what was happening.
Yeah.
You know, heard a clap of thunder, heard the dirt pop off to his left or his right. So here we are on day one. We've just traveled. I believe at this point we're like 12 to 13 miles, I'm not sure, away from the truck per the amount we've traveled per Onyx, okay?
Yeah.
And So we're in pretty deep, and it's like 6 o'clock, and it's way too far to go back to get to the truck. I mean, if we went back the way we came, we'd be riding for several hours in the dark.
Yeah.
And it's at this point that we have to make a decision about how we're going to get out of here. And it's the only time in my hunting career that I've actually thought that I was going to have to stay the night unplanned on the mountain. It was getting cold. It was getting down below freezing at night. We had no tent, no sleeping bag, no water. I think I probably had my jet boil. May have had a jet boil. I'm not sure if I brought any food, but I had jet boil for making coffee.
I think we had some Becca bars.
Yeah. Becca bars are our friend Rebecca Spring makes these granola, chocolate chip, cranberry, dried cranberry, big bars with, oh, they're good.
So good.
Becca bars. We did have some Becca bars. And yeah. As we're coming out of there, it was the only time I've really thought we're going to have to stay the night on the mountain. I was envisioning taking the wool saddle pad off my mule and using it as a blanket and wadding up underneath it. And I really thought there was no other way. And at this point is when we pull out the Onyx, our Onyx on our phones, yeah. And we find a route that we previously had not seen that came through. It was a legal route to get out of this place,
yeah.
That took us directly down the mountain, and we found it. And I want to take just a second here to talk about, and this is just a off the cuff plug for Onyx, ridiculously good. And I said this while we were on the mountain, Colby. People talk about fair chase these days. You know what makes a fair chase hunt? I mean, just let's hunt like they did 500 years ago when it was just man versus beast and no technology. Can't bait bears. Talk about fair chase, man. Onyx ought to be not fair chase. And I'm joking. I'm exaggerating to make a point about how good this Onyx mapping system is. We would not have been able to do what we did in 6 days of hunting without Onyx.
We'd have been lost.
We wouldn't have been able to find roads. We wouldn't have been able to find private land boundaries. Like, ridiculous with Onyx. I joke all the time with people about, like, they're upset with us for using bait for bears, for using hounds for bears, saying that that's fair chase. Let me tell you what's not fair chase. Using Onyx. I'm obviously joking. I think we should be able to use Onyx. It makes the backcountry experience better. But there's all these different ways to evaluate how we gain advantage over an animal. And for someone to turn a blind eye to optics, do you think prehistoric man had optics? We would have never found this bear without high-quality optics on the first night from 3 or 4 miles away.
Yep.
So, I mean, people have to... If people are not wanting to be powerfully hypocritical, they've got to be real careful about where they pass judgment on ways that people hunt. And obviously, at Bear Hunting Magazine, we are pro-predator hunting in every legal method hunting that's based upon science for regulated predator populations, for the good of the whole ecosystem, for the good of the ungulates, and for the good of the bears themselves. And so hounds, bait, trapping, whatever is legal, We gotta maintain it. And inside the hunting, and this is a perfect segue into my pet peeve, is that there's all these people that are big game hunters and don't understand baiting and hounds and these different things. And sometimes inadvertently, they are actually against us in some way by the way the stance that they take on these things, and that's hurting the whole hunting community. And so we can use bait. Well, you get to use Onyx. Okay. Yeah. I hope that point is clear. It's kind of a joke, but
I'll use Onyx with baiting.
Man, Onyx with baiting is basically equivalent to hunting out of a helicopter with a machine gun.
For hogs.
And Ted Nugent. Ted Nugent, helicopter, machine gun is equivalent to baiting bear using Onyx.
Yeah.
With Colby Moorhead.
Yeah.
Okay, bam, there
and
we go.
And Smokey.
Yeah, Smokey should not be fair chase.
Yeah, Smokey's not fair chase.
So... We're in a predicament. We think we're going to have to spend the night. We basically navigate our way through some private land and find a way out, okay? And we end up at dark riding up to the house that we were staying at the night before. and we're supposed to be driving our truck back to this place. Well, we actually were going to camp. We ride our mules down these like paved roads and get back to our host's home, knock on their door and like, hey, can we borrow your truck to go get our truck?
Yeah.
And we had gone about 18 and a half miles that day, which was an incredible day. And you know, to me, that is a power. That day was an iconic experience for big game hunting for me. I mean, we worked our tails off, went into new country, found the bear that we were after, got a shot at the bear we were after, failed, got in a sticky situation with daylight, thought we were going to have to spend the night on the mountain without provisions, ended up using technology to navigate through, and ended up back to where we're going after dark, but after a hard, long day. And after a day like that, you do feel accomplished. You don't feel victorious, because if we'd killed the bear, we'd have felt victorious. But you feel accomplished.
I feel victorious just for surviving.
Yeah. You did get, man, you... When you rode 18 miles and stayed on that day, I was like, we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Colby, and I actually thought, I was right. I knew he could do it. And you knew you could do it, too.
Mostly.
there's a lot of people that couldn't have, though, and I say that as a compliment to you.
I remember just, like, my legs giving out with the times that we had to lead, and I was just kind of like, I had that grandpa walk down the mountain. It was like angles, but just, like, little, like, half steps.
Yeah. Well, it was a great day. So let's skip through the next 2 days. Basically, the next 2 days were fairly uneventful. We tried some new areas. We went into some new places. We stayed overnight in one place, glassed a big valley. The next morning, glassed the same valley. Didn't see any bears on the second day.
Yeah.
Third day, we ended up having to come back out for some provisions, for some water, to charge some batteries. Went back up on the mountain where we shot the bear on the first day. We got up there, spent the evening glassing, and did not see a bear that evening. That's correct. We didn't see a bear. There were 2 days we didn't see bears.
There were two days? Okay.
I think so. Let's just say that for all purposes. Yeah. We certainly didn't put a stalk on a bear on day three. It was day four when things started heating up. But on the morning of day four.
Yeah.
Is when from our camp, and by this time we've now spent two nights in the backcountry, and we're camping up where we missed the bear on the first day.
Yeah,
we're overlooking this big draw. It's a burn area, so there's patchy timber, but you can see in multiple directions, long distance.
Yeah,
and the thing about hunting up here is like you could see a bear, like have clear sight of a bear, but him be hours away from you. Mm-hmm. And that's what's hard for people to understand. It's hard for me to understand. Like, sometimes when I think about hunting the West, I'm just like, well, there's a bear. Go kill it.
Yeah.
Man, it is not that easy.
I think the other thing about where we were camping was the fact that the wind was great for where we weren't going to be blowing out a lot of bears if they were close. You know, the way we came in with the wind, it just was blowing our scent away from the areas where we had seen that bear
before.
And so I don't think we would have camped there if we didn't have the new access to come in from that other direction.
That's right.
You know? But it would end up being perfect.
Well, and we hadn't talked about the new access yet.
Oh, yeah.
We skipped over that. Yeah. We basically looked up a landowner, went and contacted him by phone, and just said, hey, we're from Arkansas. We kind of pulled the Arkansas mule card, which gets a lot of sympathy and empathy, seems to. And we're like, hey, we're bear hunting. Would it be possible to go through your land? And he was like, sure, no problem. If people ask, I don't have any problem.
Yeah.
And I said, well, thank you so much. And I said, I want to come by and meet you. And he was like, well, okay, if you want to do that. We went over and shook his hand, talked to him for a minute. He was an old outfitter. Petted his dogs. Yeah. That was key.
Yeah. we accept your animals too.
So we gained access, and that's the reason we're able to get back in there. I'm glad you said that, because that sometimes these stories all come together.
Yeah.
The first day we had to ride 12 miles to get to that spot. Now we only had to ride 3 or 4 miles to get to that spot because of the new access we had.
Yeah.
So day four, we're glassing, and you spot a bear across the canyon at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Somehow,
yeah.
It's just like a little opening between the trees, and I spotted him. And then whenever I came and told you, came back, we couldn't find him.
Yeah. You were just like, I know it was a bear
he
clay.
He was there.
And it looked like, I remember you saying it looked like a good bear.
Yeah.
I mean, just a mature, just a solid bear.
Yeah.
And so from there, we glass and glass and glass, try to find this bear again, and we can't find him. But there's a lot of timber over there, so we just figure he's in the timber. Well, we decide to go down the mountain to get directly across.
Didn't you glass him before we made the move, like right before we moved?
That's right. We finally found him at 2 hours later.
Yeah.
It was at 11 o'clock. He was walking down that logging road.
Yeah.
About probably a quarter mile from where you originally saw him.
Yeah.
And you're right. He was walking down the logging road, and we saw him disappear into a little patch of timber.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
I do.
And that's actually where I ended up, spoiler alert, killing the bear the next day.
Yeah.
We see him go into this patch of timber, and we're like, okay, he's in that timber. We got to get down across the canyon from him and watch that block of timber until he comes out. Yeah. So we ride the mules probably a mile from our camp.
We led them a ways.
Well, we had to lead them because we had to traverse through a bunch of stuff where there wasn't trails or anything. And we got directly across the canyon from this bear and just staked him out. I remember we got there, I don't know, 12:30 or 1 o'clock.
Something like that.
And the whole time we're riding, we saw the bear go into the timber at 11. The whole time we're riding, we're glassing this, like making sure he doesn't leave. And we finally get over there, and we're confident that he's still there. We felt like if he'd left, we'd have seen him. We just set up camp. We're still probably 600-700 yards away across the canyon. Wind is perfect. It's never going to hurt us. And we just set up camp right there, metaphorical camp. We just sit down and glass. Yeah. While we are sitting there waiting for this bear, at 4 o'clock, a bear appears 126 yards away from us on our side of the mountain.
And I'm sleeping.
Colby's asleep. Dead asleep.
I wake up to rocks being chunked at me.
Yeah, I start. Colby's like 10 feet away, laying down on the other side of this log, and I hollered at you first, or, you know, a muffled holler.
Yeah.
You know, call me. And so I picked up a rock and threw it, hit you.
Yeah.
It didn't budge you. I threw another one, bam, and then your eyes popped open, and I said, there's a bear right here.
Yeah.
And you jump up, grab the camera. The bear is walking directly towards us. And pretty quickly, I was able to evaluate that it wasn't a bear that I was interested in taking.
Yeah.
But it still took a few minutes. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't, you know, a shooter bear.
Yeah.
And you had a tag.
Yeah.
And after watching the bear for just the second that I realized I didn't want to shoot it, I said, do you want to shoot that bear?
Yeah.
And you said, yes, I do.
Yeah.
And so we switched places. You jump on the gun. This bear doesn't know we're here. And he's walking straight towards us down a road, like feeding on grass. I mean, in my mind, when you jumped down on the gun, it was like, we're going to be skinning a bear in about 20 minutes. And what happened?
As soon as I touched the gun, that bear just decided he was going to go up a path up the forest. Like, I don't think he knew we were there. He just kind of just went up through the trees.
Yeah.
Never had a shot.
I mean, it was miraculous.
Yeah, and then later we had, two coyotes that came up and went up that same path?
Yep.
So, like, step for step, followed the same path as that bear.
Yeah. So, Colby's opportunity slipped through his hands, which truly, I that's the only part of the trip that I look back on now, and I just wish it had been different, because it would have been awesome if you'd have killed a bear.
Yeah.
And, you know, the rest of the trip, you never got an opportunity to.
No.
So when that bear leaves, we continue to watch across the hillside for the big bear. He never shows. Finally, it gets like 7 o'clock, 7:30. We've been sitting there since 1 or 2.
Yeah.
We've been sitting there for 6 hours. I think we sit there for 6 hours. And, we decide that we're going to walk down the trail to get a little bit different vantage point.
Yeah.
We go down to that vantage point.
And we leave the mules where they are.
We leave the mules. We start glassing. And what do we spy?
Blondie.
A spectacular blonde bear down, way down in the canyon. We'd been kind of looking up high. pretty much people had told me, and what we had seen was that the bears were between 4,000 and 6,000 feet. That's just typically where they were. Well, this bear was probably 3,000 feet down in the bottom of this valley. And it was, man, I'll never forget finding that bear in the binos, because when I first came on it, the bear wasn't moving. It just looked like this bright, out-of-place yellow dot. And I was just like, no way that's a color-faced bear. But dang, it sure looks like one. Its butt was facing me, so I couldn't see its profile. I could see this just like bright, blonde, yellow hump.
Yeah.
I get to watching it, and it didn't move. But before it, I was like, that's a bear. Color-faced bear. And finally it moved. I saw its head, and I was like, that is a color-faced bear. Ranged it. It was 700 yards away. I'm like, Colby, we got to get down there quick.
Time to mobilize.
We barrel off the mountain and get pretty quickly within 350 yards of it. Wind's in our favor. I get down on the gun, and I'm going to take that shot, 350 yards.
Yeah.
And dial it in, and the bear just kind of is actually moving away from us. So by the time I get down, I just almost squeeze the trigger a couple times, but then like, no, wait. And finally, the bear kind of goes out of sight. So we pick up all our gear, bust after the bear, and then it kind of becomes a rodeo.
Yeah.
Of me trying to get a shot on this bear. And what ends up happening is we're on a road above this bear, you know, a logging road.
Yeah.
Just to shut off. Small overgrown logging road, not overgrown, but and this bear is down a very steep hill directly below us, and we can just see parts of the bear. Like I can see the top of the bear's back. I can see that's mainly the challenge I was faced with. I had your shooting sticks,
yeah,
and I'm looking downhill just right at this bear. It's an odd shot angle, and basically we move up and down the road multiple times trying to get a shot on this bear as it's moving down the mountain. It has no idea that we're directly above it.
Yeah, the thermals are going up at that point.
Yeah. And so, this is about to happen. And I remember right before I squeezed the trigger, I turned to you and I said, I don't think that's a very big bear.
Yeah.
And now that I reflect on it, it was not a very big bear. I believe it was a sow. Most of these real bright-colored bears out west are sows.
Oh, well, we saw another sow that first day, right? With two cubs, the color phase ones.
Oh, that's right. We did.
Yeah, we forgot about those.
First day we saw a sow with two cubs. But here I am on the third trip to Montana. This is the closest I've been to a bear. And, you know, from my position, I want to shoot older, mature males. I mean, I preach that. And I wasn't sure about this bear. I mean, it was only upon reflection that I really was like, yeah, that was a sow, 100%.
Yeah.
And but I'm going to take this bear. I mean, the 14th or 15th cumulative day of hunting in Montana, three trips. I mean, this is a big deal. And yeah. And I've never that's the only bright blonde bear. Well, I have seen one in Saskatchewan. I take that back. I saw a bright blonde bear in Saskatchewan. But spectacular animal.
Yeah.
Western bear. This is a bear I want to take. Long story short, I bury the crosshairs on that bear's shoulder and shoot. And now I hadn't even told you this. I went back and looked at the footage.
Yeah.
Like just on the big screen. I was 14 inches above that bear's back.
Wow.
I'm serious. The ground just poof. It hit some rocks.
Wow.
I mean, it was that. It was. I bet it was 14 inches over that bear's back.
I'm glad the cameraman captured that.
You did. You're right. Right over the shoulder. Yeah, and they'll get to see it on Bear Horizon, too.
Yeah.
I'm not ashamed to put it on there. And I missed the bear.
Yeah.
It bounds off like a gazelle. I had the arc, the range compensating, or the angle compensating range finder, vortex.
Yeah.
Bam. The bear was 52 yards.
Yeah.
I think in line of sight, it was probably 80 yards. I mean, it was that steep.
Yeah.
And to this day, I wish someone could explain to me, the gun is zeroed at 200 yards. I had the gun at zero. And I just put the crosshairs mid-body. I mean, I was just thinking, you know, I might be an inch or two high. I really wasn't thinking, to be honest. But I mean, I had a rest. I was steady, squeezed, and I was way high.
Yeah.
So maybe somebody could give us some insight for why I missed. We kind of speculated, and the bear bounds off, and that's it. And I actually went down there.
We weren't sure.
You know, just made sure that the bear wasn't laying down there dead. You know, we looked. We actually came back the next day and looked for the bear. We went way out of our way, went down the bottom of that drainage, scouted around down in there, and never – the bear is still being a bear out there today. Man, so now it's day four, and I've missed two bears.
Well, but then –
did I miss another one I'm forgetting, Colby?
No. But the end of that day – you went back for the mules, and I stayed there, and then I see the bear that we were initially after going back the opposite direction, like going the direction from which he came. And so we would have never had a play on that bear from where we were with what he was doing.
Yeah, so after we shoot this colored bear, we see the bear that we were originally after. And, oh, man, he just strutted down that mountain 700 yards from us.
Not a care in the world.
No way we could have got to him.
Uh-uh.
I mean, it was a... But we did get intel from that the bear was on that side of the mountain, and, you know, we hoped he would still be there the next day.
Yeah.
So we go back to our backcountry camp and eat a couple of mountain houses. You didn't. I did.
Yeah. I went into some mode where I just didn't hardly eat.
Yeah, you really did. He didn't hardly eat. And that was the day that by the time I dropped off the mountain and came back up, I think we figured out climbed about 2,200 vertical feet that day.
Yeah.
We wake up the next morning. Let's just jump to the next day, which is day five.
Yeah.
And
then we go out because we're needing water and stuff, I think.
That's right.
Yeah, because we didn't hunt until that afternoon.
Yeah, we had to, for some reason, we had to come out.
Yeah.
We did go out.
I think we needed water and just like different things.
Yeah.
I think that's the morning of the epic breakfast.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a big breakfast down at the spot.
The lodge.
Yeah.
The watering
but
hole.
We go back in. Because we now have this shortcut into this place, it's not that hard. It takes us about 2 hours by mule to get back to our camp. So we get back to our camp.
Kind of late.
Yeah, it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, it might have been even later than that, because I stay there to set up camp.
Because we were tearing down camp and setting it up every day, because we're trying to stay mobile. So we get back to camp at 3 or 4, or maybe even 5.
Yeah, I think it's closer
and
to 5.
And I say, we make the decision, Colby, you just stay here at Glassroom Camp, set up our camp, and I'm going to take off on foot. We're going to leave the mules here.
Let them rest.
And so I go out to the point where we'd set up the day before, where we'd seen the bear. And it took me, I mean, I hadn't glassed 30 minutes, and I saw the bear.
Yeah.
And he's in basically the same spot, the same patch of timber. And I watch him and watch him and watch him, and I can't decide which direction he's going to go, because the direction that he goes will determine which direction that I go.
Yeah.
And if he goes out the mountain to the south, he's kind of out of play. But if he goes to the north, back up to the head of the hollow, oh man, it's game on. I can meet him. Well,
yeah, that all those roads kind of narrow to that point, and so you can
towards the head of the hollow.
So you're basically the closer coming you get, together like a top of a triangle.
Yes, yeah. the closer you get to the head of the hollow, the closer the shot distance is across the canyon.
Yeah, and I'm glassing this bear from a different spot, and, you know, not knowing what's going on, I'm like, man, that bear's moving slow.
I see the bear. You see the bear, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it was a different – no, it was the same bear.
Yeah. Well, so I'm trying to determine what this bear's going to do, and finally, it's kind of like he's just stalling over there. I felt like he only had two decisions and that he was going to do one or the other, go north or south, but he really didn't. He kind of just stayed there. But it was hard to determine that because he would be out of visibility and invisibility. And basically, I felt like he was going to go back to the north, which would have been to my advantage. And so I start heading up the hollow, but he never comes. And long story short, I make the decision to try to beat darkness and go get on his side of the mountain. It's kind of like he's not doing anything. I'm going to have to go over there to him.
Yeah.
And so I just start hooking it. And it's a couple of mile walk, around the head of this canyon. And I mean, I remember just walking as fast as I can walk. Yeah. Just pounding. Now, there was only one time when I had to gain some elevation. But for the most part, it was relatively easy walking. It was just long distance, other than this one section where I had to gain about 500 feet of elevation. And basically, I get over there, and at this point, it really didn't matter if the wind was in my favor or not. I mean, we're on day five. I know there's a bear back over here. And luckily, the wind was in my favor. But even if it wasn't, I think I still would have gone. I mean, there comes a point in a hunt when you just have to make something happen, and you just have to say something good is going to happen. And so I come around this point, and man, the bear is just right there.
Yeah,
he's 169 yards standing on this logging road. And when I say road, this is like a what do they call it? A defunctionalized road. There's a phrase that they use out there, a reclaimed road. I mean, you couldn't have ridden a four-wheeler on it. I mean, just a old logging road.
Yeah.
And the bear is right there. And I mean, that's totally in range. He doesn't know I'm there. 169 yards. I mean, that's like a chip shot. And man, the excitement and satisfaction of seeing that bear was incredible. Of all my hunting experiences, it was as good as any of them in terms of, and it's kind of hard to describe because of the work that we'd put in up until that point, not with just this hunt, but with the other two. And it's like, finally, I'm really within striking distance of a bear. Going to have time to get down on him. He doesn't know I'm here. It's just perfect. And I get in a prone position, put the gun 0 to 200, put it right behind his shoulder. Bam. You hear the shot go off.
Yeah, I heard the shot.
You can't see us. You can't see us.
I have no idea what's going on. I just knew one shot meant one of you's going to die. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
You were like, please don't miss again, Glenn. Yeah. You watched me miss twice at long and close. And you're like, man, he's explored the gamut of potential misses here.
Yeah. I had decided that the third time's a charm where I'm going to start giving you a hard time.
Yeah. Oh. Well, in between, too, it's to note that we went and shot the gun up on the mountain because we were like, it's something wrong.
Yeah.
Missed twice, one at close range, one at long range, is the gun off? And we did go and shoot.
It hit right where?
Shot at 200 yards at a rock, about probably 7-inch rock, and just
dusted it.
So we felt good about the gun. Mm-hmm. But still, after missing twice, it does take some of your confidence. But when I squeezed the trigger, I felt like the bear was hit. Sometimes with a rifle shot, it's amazing. You feel like they're just going to roll over. But, I hit him in the lungs. So if I'd hit him in the shoulder, he probably would have folded up. But
oh, my God, I wish that would have happened.
That would have been easier. He still would have barreled off there because he was off the edge of the road.
Oh, okay.
But he might have just rolled down there 50 feet rather than 100 yards. But when I shot, he sailed like a superhero off that mountain, and I never see him again. It was just a flash, and I run over there thinking I'm going to get a second shot if he's still moving, and I hear him. I don't hear him death moan, but I hear him growling down there. Pretty much if you hear a vocalization I've found after a shot, it's usually a good thing. And felt like the bear was dead. I go over there and pretty much immediately just go down to the bear, and I find the bear. Find the bear probably 80 to 100 yards below the road. And that sounds like he ran far. He didn't run far. He probably made 3 or 4 big bounds and then just rolled. But that's how far it was.
It was pretty down.
It was straight down.
Yeah.
So, man, I was incredibly excited. Made it back to camp surprisingly before dark. And per Onyx, I'd traveled like 7.5 miles round trip that afternoon from camp. And, man, we went back in there the next day with the mules, and it's kind of another story. But one of the big things that we didn't know was whether our mules would carry a bear.
Yeah.
We really didn't know. Izzy was untested. Izzy's carried coons, turkeys. I know she'll carry a deer. I had a deer here that I put up on her back. She's had some bad experiences with bears, though, when we were baiting bears in Arkansas. We had some live bears come in on us while we were baiting bears multiple times. Kind of freaked her out.
And Smokey's the great mystery.
Yeah, and we don't know about Smoke. I mean, a mule could go either way. You could have the best mule in the world, quote-unquote, like riding mule, and him be petrified of game. We do not know.
Yeah.
We don't know Smokey's history. Trey had only bought Smokey about a year before and had never carried big game on Smokey. Just carried squirrels on him. So, man, we start bringing up meat and hide, and that's a whole other story, but we got it up out of there, quartered him up on the side of the mountain. Brought him out of there in game bags.
Had to dig footholes to get back up.
Yeah. It was a true Western experience for 100 yards. Think if we had to pack that thing out of there.
Oh.
It wouldn't have been that bad once we got it up out of that ravine. Then it had just been 2 hours of just kind of downhill walking.
Yeah.
But basically, Izzy was okay with the meat. And to make a long story short, she carried the meat, no problem. But she flipped out on the hide.
Yeah.
So for all you following Project Honey Mule, I've got to be honest about the update. She flipped out. I mean, flipped out to the point I thought she was going to hurt herself.
Yeah.
She's tied to a tree. And, I mean, I think, like, she's going to break her neck trying to get away from this bear hide.
Yeah, or break the lead. She hit it hard.
Yeah, so much so that I tied another rope onto her halter thinking she's going to break that lead and bust out of here, and we're going to have to catch her, and at least we'll have another lead on her that maybe we can catch her. Well, we just took our time. If there's one thing that I do understand about training equine animals is you just got to give them time and you can't pressure them. So we sat there with that hide within about 30 feet of her for probably 20, 30 minutes, just chilled out, just kind of sat around, messed with the animals. I put the meat on Izzy, which I was very happy with, pleased that she let me put the meat on her. I had no problem with that. I'd bring meat over, and my hands were just covered in bear smell, and I would feed her these, you know, our range cubes. So she's having to put her nose down in bear and eat. I fed her on top of some of the meat bags, like put grain on them, or, you know, the cubes. But every time I would inch towards her with that hide, she would flip out.
Yep.
So pretty much this is a stressful situation because we don't know if Smokey's going to do the same thing. Long story short, we bring Smoke over, and he could care less about that bear.
Yeah.
I mean, I put some range cubes on the bear hide, and he's just like, oh, cool, range cubes.
Yeah.
He's just like eating the range cubes off of this bear hide. And I'm like, okay, that's a good sign. I mean, I was praying.
Yeah.
I really was. I was just like, God help us to make this work somehow. And, man, Smoke saved the day.
Yeah.
And we just threw that hide over the saddle horn, Smoke, and just came out of there. No big deal.
And then Iz, like, she was getting closer and closer and getting okay with it. Like,
yeah.
So I think Smokey even helped her some for again, sure. You know.
So for 2 hours coming out of there,
yeah,
she was riding right behind Smokey, who's carrying this bear hide. She's downwind of it. She's watching it. So it was actually a great experience for her.
I mean, when we stopped, she even, like, went up, put her nose up to it, sniffed it. Like.
And see, these are the things that you have to do as an animal trainer. Is that, you know, like somebody that didn't know might have just been like, well, that mule's never going to carry hides. You know, that mule never carry a bear hide. Or if we had pressured her, we truly could have ruined her from it.
Yeah.
Like if I would have just thrown it on her and just said, buck all you want. I mean, like that would have been a massive mistake that you might not ever be able to recover from.
Yeah.
But the way we did it, I was very happy. I mean, I would have been real happy if she just walked up there and I could have just thrown it on her back, but it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And so, but she carried all the meat out of there, and out of there we came. Yep. We got back to the truck about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We left our camp at daylight. So it took us like 8 hours.
Yeah.
With mules to get that bear out of there.
Yeah.
We were that far back. It was just hard. Just everything about that kind of hunting is hard.
Yeah.
Smoke got wore out. I mean, this last trek, this is day six now. And per on X, after the full thing, we had traveled, I think I calculated like 58.5 miles or something.
Yeah.
By the time we finished day six with the bear hideout. And on the way up the mountain on day six, Smoke was pretty much done.
He wasn't loving life.
He was just like, I mean, he wasn't lame. You know, sometimes you can get an animal in the backcountry and they just pretty much get where they can't walk.
Yeah.
And they just need to rest 2 or 3 days. And that's a bad situation to be in.
Smokey just found his granny gear and just would chug along. But every chance he would get, he would want to go back down the mountain.
Yeah.
You know, but
he was trying to take
He just found his low gear and he's like, this is what I'm willing to give.
We finally, on the way up, had to get you off of him.
Yeah.
And we had to walk him.
Yeah.
Just to get him going. Mm-hmm. But thankfully, the way down the mountain, he did great.
Yep.
And man, we came out of there feeling like a couple of heroes with a bear hide over the saddle horn and meat. And Colby, to me, that was a iconic moment that as a bear hunter, I wanted to experience.
Yeah.
Equine based, my mules. I mean, Smoke wasn't my mule, but close enough.
Yeah.
My mule that I trained, I rode the whole week. We went back in there. We killed a bear. You know, we've got this shirt that I made earlier in the year of some artwork that I did. I like to draw and stuff anyway. Yeah. Mule Riding Bear Hunter. And it's a picture of a guy coming out on a mule with a bear draped over the saddle horn.
Yeah.
And this was that to me. And, you know, there's all these different categorization of bear hunts. You know, I mean, you can go to Southeast Alaska and hunt these bears back in these estuaries, you know, tidal estuaries. And you can go to Arkansas and hunt bears over bait. You can go up north and hunt bear in the boreal forest. You can go to the Appalachians and hunt bear over hounds with those guys. Western equine-based do-it-yourself rifle hunt bear is its own category.
Yeah.
And so I've experienced a wide swath of success in all these different types of hunting, and I wanted to do it out west, and so it was a big deal, and it was a great experience, and it was cool getting to do it with you, but being your first time out there, first time on mules, and I mean you did incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, especially for having 7 days to prepare.
Yeah.
Guys prepare like 6 months for these kind of things.
Yeah. I just had to get tough quick.
Yeah. And that's what I commend you for, is mental toughness. Like, you never, you know, when you're choosing a hunting partner, Colby never complained. He never got a sour attitude. He never, you know, yeah, we talked about being sore or it being hard. I mean, just, but it was never like, Colby wants to go home. And spoiler alert, if you ever hunt with me, the worst thing that you can do is give that vibe of you want to do something else. I mean, it just spoils the whole thing for me.
Oh, really?
And I've just learned I don't hunt with people like that.
Yeah.
I mean, my dad taught me that when I was a kid. I mean, like in the sixth grade, if I was like, Dad, how long are we going to be here? I think he kind of pounded that out of me. And I was like, I could have taken it negatively, but I took it as positively. I was like, okay. For us to be successful, I cannot let him know that I'm not having a good time.
Yeah.
And again, I think that could have warped somebody, or not warped, but could have made it a negative experience. Like, as soon as I get out of here, I ain't never coming back.
Yeah.
But for me, it gave me insight into how that you manage type 2 difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, yeah, it's hard. Like, I don't, riding 18 miles and missing a bear and the stress of not knowing if we're going to have to sleep on the mountain with no provisions. I mean, like, that's not giggly fun.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was stressful to me. But it wasn't like I was going, Colby, we're going to come off this mountain and we're going home.
Yeah.
I mean, was there times I thought that? Yeah. Like, lots of times in 6 days of hunting, I'm like, dang, why do we even do this? But you just can't say that. I mean, it's a leadership principle. It really is. Is that not that you hide your emotions or hide difficulty, but it's like we're on a mission. We're going to complete this mission, and I'm not. Because emotions, attitudes are absolutely contagious, you know?
Yeah.
And that's truly what I appreciated about you is you never got discouraged. You were always ready to go. I mean, you know, you never were wanting to take shortcuts. That's the other thing inside of hunting partnerships is sometimes you have somebody that wants to take shortcuts. It's like, you really, to do this right, we need to do this way.
Yeah.
We need to go up the mountain this way. We need to get there. We need to camp there. We need to do this. And it's harder. And it's like, well, why don't we just do it that way? Well, we don't do it that way because we want to win. We don't want to lose. We will lose if we do it that way. Well, that's easier. Well, you know, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. I definitely modified some downhills, though. I'm a mountain slider.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'll tell you, I was surprised I didn't have holes in the bottom of all my first light, pants.
No kidding.
I mean, that was a way to keep up.
Yeah, you were sliding. Yep, you were sliding on your rear end most of the time on those downhills, but it worked.
It was steep enough for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it worked. Yeah,
it was. Well, it was an incredible trip. We just wanted to bring to you the totality of this adventure in one podcast. And, you know, I would just say I would encourage people, go out and spring bear hunt out west. And don't expect to have just immediate success. I kind of did. I kind of felt like the first trip out there would be bringing home a bear. And there's lots of people that do. I mean, it's really just a game of chance and finding that moment of good fortune, mm-hmm. like of just when you connect on a bear. And I mean, maybe that happens on the third day of your first time out west. Maybe it does, but maybe it doesn't. And I don't think I was prepared for that. Because the second time I went and made the 24-hour drive home by myself in a vehicle without a bear, I was just like, dang, I don't want to do this again. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what you think. And I actually took a year off and then came back and we were successful. And now I'm starting to build this database of ways that I feel like it takes to be successful out west. I think you got to be mobile. You got to be willing to get into backcountry and stay there if there are bears. But if there are not bears, you got to be able to get out of there. You got to be willing to sit in glass. Those are the keys for me. Being mobile. But the main key was we didn't overcommit. Like when we would go in, we would just take the provisions that we needed to just stay like 1 or 2 days. If it had been much more of a production than that, I think it would have slowed us down too much. But we're pretty mobile, and we made it work.
Yeah.
And it was early season hunt. I believe I killed the bear on May the 5th.
It was whatever that Sunday was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or May the 5th or 6th. I think it was the 5th.
Oh, yeah. I told you that you'd never look at Cinco de Mayo the same way again.
Yes. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, what your closing thoughts on the hunt, Colby?
Oh, it was definitely hard. It was fun, though. It's one of those hunts that you know that it's just so hard you're going to appreciate it afterwards. You know, one that you're going to look back on fondly. Definitely learned a lot. I mean, this was my first, like, backcountry hunting that way. Like, I've been, you know, kind of on a backcountry hunt, but it was, like, truck hunt. I mean, camping.
Wall
you
hunt.
Know?
Wall tent.
Yeah, wall tent.
Driving
it,
in a truck.
Driving the roads, glassing here and there. And it was just a totally different experience. And, I mean, it was really good, and, you know, I think it definitely is going to help with my ability to navigate those things in the future, like looking at those switchbacks a different way, learning where, like, you can go from one road to the other to cut out a half mile or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, the mules was a big thing. I mean, even, like the first day we side-hilled a lot, and that's, like, that was a weird feeling, you know? I was like, man, the saddle's not going to slip off or something.
Right.
And I was definitely impressed with everything that the mules could do. And I think, like, after that first day, whenever we learned how to manage the relationship between the two mules, where Smokey just wanted to be on her heels, it helped a lot, at least for me. But I think, like, just being able to push through those things, it just, like, builds character, like inside of you to just, you know, whenever you come up against something. I think the biggest thing about these backcountry hunts is you come to a point of like flexibility to where it's like, well, that didn't work. What now? You know, like,
yeah.
How do we adjust and how do we engage this particular scenario to where we can come to a point of success, you know, or yeah. whatever success is inside of our minds. But I think just the ability to be flexible and fluid, you know. Like if you're tree stand hunting, you're just going to go and you're going to sit in that stand for the most part.
Right.
You might hunt to and from it, but for the most part, you're committed to that thing. And
right.
I think that being mobile and moving back and forth and just, you know, just being fluid with what your plans are and not holding on to them too tight, I think that was a big thing because, I mean, you wouldn't have had a shot at that blonde bear even if we had sat there and that bear went yep. the opposite way. Like, just being willing not to hold on to anything too tightly, yeah. I think, was an important key.
Yeah.
You know, even being willing to shoot that other bear, you know, well, what happens to the other one? Well, this bear's right here, you know.
That's right. Yep.
So.
Well, incredible experience, and this is, we're going to have multiple more podcasts from the Montana tour. Like we said, we interviewed Joe Condellas, we interviewed Brian Strickland, we interviewed Aaron Snyder, all on this trip. They weren't necessarily about this trip, but we referenced this trip on this podcast. Yeah. But hey, thanks for joining us, and keep the wild places wild, because that's where the bears live.